Pain is temporary. Pride is forever. Why is Will Witt in a suit? Huh? Why is Will Witt not in board shorts today in flip-flops? Amla is very impressed with my outfit.
Extremely, extremely.
Yes, and so we're not starting with a skit today because today is a very important day that I would like to share with you all. Imagine you're talking to someone about illegal immigration and you don't have the facts on hand and you need to know the questions and things that you need to ask people. That's what my book is for. It's not just illegal immigration, but it is all of the biggest topics of the day. Any cultural, political topic. There are 17 chapters within this book, and this book gives you the tools to be able to fight back, vanquish evil, and stand up against the radical left that is aiming to destroy this country. This book will give you the tools to do that, okay? It's been a year and a half of me writing this book, advertising, marketing, doing everything for this book. It is the first book I have ever made, and this is one of the most amazing days of my life to be able to finally have this book, How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies, come out that all of you guys can order. And I want to just come on and say thank you to all of you, because all of you have made this book and everything that I've done with PragerU and within my career and life possible. About 6 years ago, I was in college in Colorado, and I was incredibly depressed. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I was alone. I was wasting my time. I was partying. I was not doing anything that I should have been doing. But I knew that, you know, I had this fire inside of me that I wanted to do something. And I found out about PragerU, and PragerU eventually offered me a job after I started, you know, basically taking accountability for my actions, being responsible and working hard. And PragerU offered me a job. And so I dropped out of school after 2 years to move to Los Angeles and do all this. And sitting in that disgusting dorm room that smelled horrible with crumbs and food all over the floor and my dirty clothes and me being a slob and blaming everyone else for my problems, after I became a conservative and said, hey, I want to do something with my life that I don't think anyone else has ever done before. And so I decided to change my life and move out to Los Angeles and work with PragerU. And I never expected that I would have a full-blown book, How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies, my first book. I was on Instagram Live last night, if you guys follow me, and I was getting rather emotional about it because this is truly a huge deal for me. I mean, I hope it's a huge deal for you guys too if you've been following me since the beginning of how important this is for me. You guys have seen me spam this book on social media and on this show, and you know how much I've been pushing it, but I have to say thank you to all of you, because I could never be here if it wasn't for all of you and the hard work that you guys have done pushing conservative values out there, pushing freedom out there, just being the most amazing fans and supporters that I could ever ask for. You guys seriously have been there for me through all of this. And so this is the day my book comes out. There's a link in the description where you can order the book. We are very close to getting on some of these bestseller lists, whether that's New York Times, whether that's Amazon, whether that's Wall Street Journal bestseller list. We are very close to all of them. And so if you can pre-order or order the book, I can't say pre-order anymore because I have to change it. Order the book now because it is officially out. Click the link in the description or go to anywhere where books are sold. Go to Amazon, Books a Million, Barnes & Noble, Target. Order the book, How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies, Taking on Liberal Ideas with Logic and Humor. It is available now. Get your copy today. Thank you guys so much. I really do appreciate it.
Go get Will's book, everybody. He spent a lot of time on this. Oh, great. Love it.
Wow. Wow.
That's twice today that you've gotten claps for your book.
I know. No, it's very nice. If no one will actually give me claps, then we have to play the sound effect of claps.
Yes, it's extremely important that we do that. So yeah, go buy Will's book, everybody. Now, let's get into the stories of today. This first one is obviously not going to be a very pleasant one if you've read the headline. First of all, let's go ahead and say rest in peace to Gabby Petito. Her body has been found and identified to be her. So this is a really horrible turn of events that happened to this very young 22-year-old girl. I mean, she's only 1 year older than me. I cannot possibly imagine this happening to somebody. And it's been sad, and it's taken the world by storm, the media specifically. Now, somebody else who's been trending alongside Gabby Petito is a woman by the name of Joyanne Reed. You might know her by The Read Out, which is her show, her late-night show. Now, Joyanne Reed had this to say about Gabby Petito's death and the media coverage around it.
If you've been watching the news for the past few days or on Twitter or TikTok, you're probably familiar with the name Gabby Petito, the 22-year-old aspiring social media influencer who was reported missing after her fiancé returned from their van life excursion without her. On Sunday, human remains believed to be Petito's were found in a national park in Wyoming. An autopsy is scheduled for tomorrow to confirm the identity. Now, it goes without saying that no family should ever have to endure that kind of pain. And the Petito family certainly deserves answers and justice. But the way this story has captivated the nation has many wondering, why not the same media attention when people of color go missing? Well, the answer actually has a name, missing white woman syndrome. The term coined by the late and great Gwen Ifill to describe the media and public fascination with missing white women like Lacey Peterson or Natalie Holloway, while ignoring cases involving missing people of color. Joining me now is Derica Wilson, co-founder and CEO of the Black and Missing Foundation, and Lynette Gray Bull, founder of Not Our Native Daughters, an organization created for the awareness of the missing, exploited, and murdered Indigenous women and children. Thank you both for being here. You know, I bring up this point because there's a case that's so similar. A journalist friend of mine, Derica, sent me this story about a young, about some other people that are missing. There's one guy whose name is Daniel Robinson. Daniel Robinson is a young black man. He's only 24 years old, 5'8", 165, black hair, brown eyes. That's his description. His dad has hired a private investigator to find him. He's missing part of an arm. He was last seen driving away from his job site in the Buckeye, Arizona desert on June 23rd. And his case struck me because it's very similar. He's missing in the same part of the world. It's a case that it has all of that same kind of sizzle, the sort of mystery of it. This young man who just goes missing. I never heard of it until this friend of mine sent it to me. And I guess that's the issue, isn't it?
It is definitely the issue. And we have been sounding the alarm for.
Yeah, so that's what Joy Reid had to say about the Gabby Petito case, that it is a case of the missing white woman syndrome, that the media tends to focus a lot on white women when they go missing. Now, of course, this went viral because I will agree this was not the time and not the place to have this discussion, especially after, this woman was just found. This young lady was just found. Her parents are still dealing with this. You still have a killer on the loose when it comes to this, which who knows who it is. I'm not going to give speculation on that. But of course, the internet went crazy when they heard Joy Reid say this. Now, I want to highlight Matt Walsh, who did respond to what Joy Reid had to say. And here was his response. You could just as easily spin it as an anti-male bias. Men only make the news in murder cases when they're the killers, not the victims. The truth, of course, is that the media simply covers whatever case will be the most salacious and attention grabbing. It is not about race or gender. I like true. This. There's yep. just silence.
No, I was on the Ben Shapiro show today, and Matt Walsh was the guest host, so mm-hmm. I was on with Matt Walsh. Matt Walsh has really grown on me, gonna be honest. Matt Walsh, I used to, I didn't think his opinions were as great as I do now, but now mm-hmm. I think he's actually in the top five best conservative voices out there, seriously. Like the things, I mean, I'm in that top five too, but he's there as well. He makes the list, he makes a cut. No, but he's actually, I think that he just says what's true all the time, and I really appreciate that about him. And there's something to be said about the left and how the left views the tragedies in this country. Mm-hmm. And the left actually doesn't look at black on black crime. Like, we look at black on black crime in America, and the left doesn't talk about that. Something that conservatives will say when we're talking about gun violence or police brutality, like, we'll talk about the black on black crime and say, hey, well, why don't we focus on this too? And say, like, how can we fix these communities? How can we make it so that people aren't going to shoot each other and be safer and, like, not have to worry about this? But the left, the mainstream media left, doesn't want to focus on that. And so when she's saying that, she should really be calling out herself and her own exactly. network for not pointing out the truth and saying, hey, yep. like, why don't we focus on this? It's actually, it's funny that she points it out because it's ironic that it's actually her fault and the other yeah. people's fault.
Yeah, it's interesting because you are a black woman who has a very prominent platform that you could uplift these cases and you could be talking about what's happening, and you choose not to. It's only when other people don't do what you expect them to do that you call them out and you say this. And again, not the time, not the place.
One thing about that, about the not the time, not the place thing,
yeah.
is that, people, like, tragedies will happen. And people will always say, we can't politicize the tragedies and all mm-hmm. of that. And conservatives, I think, do a very good job of not politicizing tragedies and things that happen. But the only tough part about that is that the left will disregard that, and that the left will take a tragedy and immediately politicize it, place blame on someone, or make it into a political issue, and then conservatives are kind of left behind because we didn't say anything about it or give our opinion on it. So, yes, it is not good to politicize these tragedies, but it's like, if we're not going to do it and the left is, that makes it really hard for us to ever get our point across when these tragedies happen, because we're not doing anything or saying anything about it when it happens. Right. And so it's tough. It's kind of like a rock and a hard place when it comes to that.
It is. It is.
Yeah, it's a fine line. But the thing, the part of it that frustrates me is that the story is never the story. It's like we talked about the border this week. Like, there is a veritable crisis at the border, you know, 10, 12, 15,000 immigrants out in the hot sun every day. Their border is completely overwhelmed. But that's not the story. The story is how some border patrol officers were enforcing the law and doing their job while riding a horse, and some images of that got misinterpreted, and now we have a story because we can skew that as some sort of, you know, oh, they're cracking whips against the Haitians, and the black race stuff comes into play. And so the story is not the actual crisis, it's a misinterpreted facts or misinterpreted picture, with a, because that fits the narrative that they're already trying to push. And again, like, you know, this is essentially what they're doing in this case. Is you have it, you have a story that has a ton of attention already organically. This was already, people are talking about this in social media, but the story is not the story. The story is how we can, you know, problematize this and make it about race. And that is the part that's frustrating to me.
Yeah, no, that's super upsetting. It's just like, the left is all about collective good. Think about how much collective good you could do if you actually use your platform to do good. There's a person that they're looking for in relation to this case. Why didn't Joy Reid use her platform to say, hey, why aren't we looking for Brian Laundrie? She could have simply done that. Instead, they look at this case, which is a tragic case, a 22-year-old girl who's killed, who's dead now, and they go, well, how can I spin this to make this, how can I make this more salacious? How can I make this worse? And that's what everybody's doing. And we're going to get into another clip.
I'll say this real quick, just a response to that. That, again, that it is her show. I mean, she can go and say what she wants to say.
Yes. Right,
I know tons of people on Fox News. I'm not going to say the shows, but I know for a fact that the headquarters of Fox will tell the producers and hosts of the show and say, you can't talk about this. And then they do it anyway. So it's not, and they're still fine, and they're getting tons of good ratings. So it's not like she couldn't go on and talk about what she wants to say, even if her the higher ups at her network said, no, you can't talk about it. Like, you can talk about these black on black crimes and the black deaths and those black people missing. Like, no one is forcing you not to. You have the ultimate power, if you have a show and a platform, to do so. You know, sometimes sometimes people at PragerU will say, Will Anomaly, you can't talk about this.
Yeah,
and we do it anyway, which gets us in trouble.
Above the law.
Yeah, which gets us in trouble sometimes. We're not supposed to, but sometimes we'll do that. And, you know, and it's like, that's kind of the challenge that you have as a creator or a host of something to talk. And like, you have to choose the things that you're going to talk about and say, well, this is really important, I'm going to talk about it anyway.
Right.
And so she has the ultimate authority to come in and say something that maybe someone's telling her not to say, but she can say it. She has every right to say it.
And Matt Walsh did highlight that. He tweeted out a video, which I'm not going to show the video, but it's about a murder of a woman by the name of Brittany Hill, who was murdered by gang violence while holding her daughter. It's completely on video. Joy Reid didn't cover it. Nobody heard a lick about Brittany Hill being killed by gang members. And Matt Walsh points out why? Because of who the perpetrators are. Nobody wants to spin a narrative that doesn't support what they're already trying to propagandize. And that's exactly what's happening right here with this Gabby Petito case. Now,
she knows that she's going to get more ratings talking about how no one talks about black people missing than actually talking about black people missing.
Exactly.
And that's the sad part of it, you know, because they've manipulated their audience to be this woke army of people so hard that when it comes to actually black struggles, black issues, they won't even talk about it because they don't even trust that they'll get the ratings that they want. How crazy is that?
This subject matter makes me very, very upset. And it speaks to the problem of that. The people who are going to sell you on an issue, sell you on your oppression, sell you on your victimhood, more often than not, have the power to solve that problem. Joy Reid is one of those people who is going to preach to you about your victimhood, tell you about how if you went missing, nobody would talk about you. And she fully has the power and the platform to solve that problem and chooses not to do it. Now, here's another person who has the power and platform to solve it, although he does work for a larger corporation. This is Don Lemon.
This is not cancel culture.
No, I'm saying there's nothing cancel culture about it. I'm saying it sounds like there's something wrong. We don't like the family. No, they have a lawyer who has said to them, the police are trying to make a case. If they talk to you, they can use whatever you say against you and against Brian, even if you didn't mean it that way. don't do it. Most defense attorneys would give that advice.
Yes, I don't disagree with that. But to be able to have an attorney and do that, and you ask any person of color, you ask a black man if they have that sort of privilege, ask a poor
it's
white
not
person.
A privilege. No, it's
hold
a
on.
Right.
I know okay? that. I know, but most people don't know that. And they're not treated that way by law enforcement. Even if you think that, you know, cops are the good guys, yeah, many times they are. But many times they aren't, especially when it comes to people of color and poor people in the society who don't have the means to be able to stand behind a lawyer and not go to speak. Do you think, like, someone who, you know, a Don Lemon, if I wasn't who I am, they'd be like, hey, get your butt in here. What do you know about the disappearance of such and such? Why won't you talk? Oh, do you need a lawyer because you're guilty? All of that would go down.
Yeah, they do that to black people, white people. They do that to a lot of people.
That's what I said. This is about black people and poor people, meaning because all people are poor. Not all people, but there are people of all different ethnicities who are poor. And they don't have the privilege of being able to afford an attorney who will tell them that they can't go in. What did you say to me today? Until you're arrested, that's when you are assigned an attorney for free.
If you
otherwise,
want
before then, you got to shell out some dough for an attorney.
You have to shell
out
some dough, but you don't need a lawyer. You just need to know your rights. And obviously, you can't be compelled. And not to get too far away from the fact pattern here, because the real problem here is that prosecutors are going to have to make a case. Now, what you said initially, Brian Laundry taking off, that is going to be consciousness of guilt.
Come on, man. White kids are just as smart as poor kids. Jeez.
And it almost comes off as if he doesn't even understand the legal system.
No. But
you
even in the Joy Reid video, she literally gave the example of one of the people who is black who went missing. Mm-hmm. And this, he's talking about, like, oh, they don't have the resources. And in that video, Joy Reid literally says his dad hired a private investigator to find him.
Right.
So what? What are you saying?
Can you go, Taylor?
Well, I mean, yeah, you're exactly calling it out. Like, the black guy's dad that she's using as the example had enough privilege or wealth or whatever to hire a private investigator, which is the whole premise of Don Lemon's argument, is that people of color, he's being racist by suggesting that people of color are too poor to afford lawyers or private investigators. He's the one who's making that racist suggestion. And then he kind of tries to backtrack it, but he can't backtrack it because it's the whole premise of his point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and let's not forget the actual foundation of our legal system, which protects people who are poor and underprivileged and can't afford to get attorneys and gives them public defenders. I don't understand where the argument here. And a public defender is fully trained to tell you what your rights and privileges are and what you can and cannot do and what you should and should not do. And his fact that police officers run into the interrogation room and say, oh, well, do you need a lawyer because you're guilty? Do you need this? Do you need that? They do that with everybody across the board because their job is to investigate crimes. Their job is to find out what happened, and they will do that through whatever avenue they see fit. But they will do that regardless of whether or not you're black, you're white, you're Asian, you're Hispanic, you're poor, you're rich. It doesn't matter. And our system protects those who don't have the resources to protect themselves.
I know this is 100% true because I'll tell you guys a quick story. I had a kid who stole money from a house that I was watching. And I'm not going to give too many details. I did. You know, he's growing up great. No. A guy who I knew, and he stole money from a house that I was watching over a break. And, you know, eventually the cops come and figure everything out. But they say that it's my fault. And then, you know, they're doing this exact same thing. They're questioning me so hard. They're telling me, like, oh, this could, like, it's your fault and you're blaming this and all this. And, like, they're being just as hard on me as they would on anybody else. You know, it's like, and that's maybe an anecdotal situation of me explaining my situation. But, you know, I can attest firsthand that, for me at least, they do that to everyone.
Right.
It's just how it is.
Yeah, and just in case you don't know that, if you ever get arrested by the police, immediately ask for a lawyer.
Yes.
That is your right, and don't say anything. And that's something that everybody should be educated on. But immediately ask for a lawyer. If you can't afford one, they will give you one, and don't say anything. That's it. That is it. The fact that we can racialize this and politicize this, it just blows my mind.
And one other wrinkle in this whole thing is, you know, there's this talk about, well, we only care about this because this is a white woman and we're not doing enough to, you know, raise attention to black women's issues. How about how Joy Reid and Don Lemon both went after Nicki Minaj in the last week, a black woman,
right.
And made disparaging comments against her and got into tiffs with her because she thought for herself and spoke against the narrative that they push. So again, it's not, they don't believe the stuff that they say. They say we're trying to elevate black women's voices and we're not drawing enough attention to them and all that, but then a black woman speaks her mind and they shame
turn
her and try to shut her down.
Yep.
And so they don't, again, they contradict themselves over and over again, and it's pretty old at this point. So yeah, I don't know who takes these people seriously.
They don't care. They only love what serves their agenda. That's it.
The people yelling at me inside of a Ralph's for not wearing a mask take these people seriously. And I don't take them seriously. So.
Yeah, I mean, these people get to have these huge platforms and get to say whatever we want. Will, you're
oh, sorry. I was looking.
And meanwhile, when we conservatives try to speak, even though Nicki Minaj is not a self-proclaimed conservative, they get attacked. Now, we have an example of that happening with one of our very own PragerFORCE members by the name of Kong Min Lee. He was an engineer. Now he's no longer hired at the firm that he's working at right now because they fired him for his political statements on the internet. We're going to get into his interview. One of our PragerFORCE members by the name of Kong Min Lee, who has an interesting encounter that he just had with cancel culture and everything that goes along with that. Kongwin was fired from his job simply for being a conservative on the internet. Kongwin, thank you for being on the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I wish I could be on here with better news, but it is what it is.
Yeah, this is not necessarily the grand story that we were expecting to have happen with you. But can you tell me a little bit about really what your job is and then the whole situation that went down with the firing?
Yeah, so I used to be an engineer at a pharmaceutical company, and basically what happened was 2 days ago I got a call. I was just working, and then I got a call from someone in my company, and they said, "Hey, is this Kong Min Lee?" And I'm like, "Yeah, this is me. What's up?" They said, "Okay, I'm calling you to let you know that your employment is terminated effective immediately because of egregious policy infraction, and that policy I violated apparently was that I posed a reasonable violent threat to the company, which is absurd. I don't even own a gun. So what am I going to do? I've been working at the company for over a year. I've had good performance reviews. All my employees and my supervisors loved me. So what violent threat did I pose? Like, I'm just a regular 5'8", 160-pound Korean dude who never owned a gun before. Like, what am I going to do? I have no criminal record. Nothing. Like, I am clean, squeaky clean. And then so the whole process essentially behind this was, in a nutshell, is that our company starts to talk about imposing a vaccine mandate for all employees. And for me, this is not simply a political thing for me, but it is seriously a freedom and medical choice thing for me. So no one should be forced or coerced into putting chemicals in their body that they feel like they should not. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of choice. Really, it is. And so when we think about the vaccines and things like that, like, there's so many studies, and we can get onto the weeds later, but essentially people should have the choice.
Right.
And I think it is malpractice, medical malpractice, and it is unjust for people who sit really high up in the company who don't know you, who don't know your medical history, who don't know your allergic reactions, if you have cancer, if you have any sort of, risk of anaphylaxis or like any, they don't know you. They don't know your medical history. They don't know your medical conditions. But then to force you to take this, it's like, it's very, very unjust, and it's not okay. Like, I am not okay with it. And then so I started to speak out during the meetings and started to ask a lot of questions and leave a lot of comments about all the studies and about why I feel like this is unjust and this isn't right and this is unscientific. And then so I guess, they saw me as, okay, like, who is this guy? And then so before this, they didn't see my social media, and then they took no notice of me because I'm just a measly low employee down at the bottom of the corporate ladder.
Was there knowledge that you were a prominent conservative online before this whole situation happened?
No. I mean, there are a couple employees who knew, and they supported me, and they're like, "Hey, like, I love what you do online, like, keep it up." But obviously, like, at large, the company, the higher ups at my company didn't know, because I'm just a measly small employee at the bottom chain of the ladder. And then they saw me speak up like very, very vehemently against these vaccine mandates. And all I did was ask questions and put comments about all these reputable sources that they say only look at these sources. I'm like, okay, according to these sources, we wouldn't need a mandate. I mean, it's absurd. And then they saw that and they're like, oh, who is this kid? And then they obviously looked me up on social media, and then they found my social media, and then they terminated me without any warnings, just out of the blue, straight out of left field. And I was just like, well, looks like I'm fired.
Really? So did you give any pushback to them when you got this call? I know you explained they called you, they went through your tweets and everything that they thought was incendiary. Did you give pushback? And if so, what was the response to that?
Yeah, I said, hey, can I explain myself? And then they said, okay, let us finish saying what we need to say first. And then I was like, okay. And then I started to say, okay, well, clearly I wasn't inciting violence. I never called for violence. And all throughout my platform, I have condemned violence in every single way. Whatever happened on 1/6 and all the BLM riots and all these acts of violence, I always condemned. And so I was telling them, I'm like, if you know me, I am one of the most, I'm the least violent person you'll meet. I don't even own a gun. How am I posing a threat to the company? And then they said, we won't listen to you. We're going to hang up on you because this decision is final and you cannot change our minds, and nothing you do will change this decision. It is final and your employment is terminated.
Wow.
And I said, wow, like without even any warning? And they just fired me without even asking me, without giving me any warnings, nothing, absolutely nothing. And it's like, why were they so quick? Why were they so fast to fire me? They're so eager to fire me. I don't know. Well, I can't think of any other reason other than my politics. Like, I kind of want to claim the hashtag stop Asian hate, but I don't know if it's racist.
Exactly.
It's just my politics and me being opposed to the vaccine mandates.
Yeah, so we hear so much about cancel culture as a collective, just as a problem in this nation. And you're somebody who talks about it a lot on your own platform. To be somebody who has finally experienced it on an individual level, what is that like? And what do you think it says about where our country is going?
Well, Nicki Minaj said this past week, which is actually very, very true. She said the cancel culture we're experiencing today, it's no different than China. Which is very true, because this mob with this corporate state collusion blob, establishment blob, seeks to crush any sort of political dissidents. And then so, you know, like it sucks. It sucks beyond the other side of it. I mean, Nicki Minaj felt it this past week where every single news publication and media outlet, they're smearing her, slandering her, lying about her. All these celebrities talking crap about her. And trying to silence her and pressure her. Like the White House even tried to pressure her and lied about her when she said they reached out to her. And then she said, oh, I didn't want to. And then there's like, oh, we never invited her to the White House. And we all know the White House would have invited her in private and told her to like shut up and comply or else. But then obviously they couldn't when she invited, you know, whoever, Dr. Fauci and all those public health officials to have a public conversation, because then they can't say that to her. And so... It sucks and it doesn't feel good. And I thought we lived in America where there's freedom of speech and freedom of expression. And obviously I am not I don't hold the idea that we just let every single thing like roam free. Like there are certain things we should cancel. Like we should cancel rapists. We should cancel serial killers. I think those are atrocious things that we should cancel. But then just voicing our concerns about tyrannical vaccine mandates, that is not something that we should ever be canceling. And this is something we should be talking about and having conversations about. And obviously they're trying to suppress that because this weird corporate tyrannical blob with the state and this establishmentarian like complex that's just ruling over our country right now. They just hate any sort of opposition, and they'll do whatever it takes to crush it. And it's very slow, taking like few people out at a time, until eventually there's no one else to speak out on it.
Wow. I mean, clearly you're still an extremely vocal person. It didn't quite work to fire you from your job. You're still going to be speaking your political opinions on the internet, on all your different platforms. What do you have to say to the people who are scared to speak up because they're scared that what happened to you might happen to them?
I mean, here's the thing. If you don't speak up now, you won't be able to speak up later. And then if you're scared of losing your job right now, you won't have a job to begin with. I mean, not begin with, like, you won't have a job later on. Like, they'll right. they're continuing to move the goalpost. They're going to continue to change the standards, and they're going to start imposing and cracking down on anyone who has any sort of a different political, religious, or even just like moral philosophy. They'll just crack down on whoever goes against the will and the whims of the state. And then the state is obviously in collusion with all these huge multi-billion-dollar corporations. But if you don't speak up now, you won't be able to in the future, because either you speak up now in conviction, because we really are living in the fourth turning, and if we don't mm-hmm. preserve this nation now, like, America will go. But if you don't speak up now, they will come after you, and then they'll come after your children. And then it'll get to a point where we're seeing in, like, Australia, where they, you know, install apps where they're tracking you everywhere you go.
Right.
They're shutting down public transportation so that people won't be able to protest anymore. They're setting up camps to send you to for public health measures. It's going to get worse and worse. And so if we don't speak up now, it'll only get worse. And it's naive to think that we can just kind of let this slide by and it won't affect us, because they will come to you. No matter how much you try to appease them, they will come to you, and they're continuing to gain power and control and wealth. So we just have to be bold, be courageous. They're, you know, half of this country agrees with you. So mm-hmm. be that voice, motivate and galvanize people around you to band together and speak up against it, because we still have a semblance of freedom of speech, and our constitution is not completely subverted yet. So we still have the power as we, the people, to speak out and speak truth and, you know, fight for what is good.
Amazing. Kongman, I'm so sorry all of this happened to you, but it seems like it's made you even more empowered. So I'm glad that you're speaking out, and you're speaking out even louder now after what's happened to you. Thank you so much for getting on here and telling your story. And for all the people listening at home, don't be afraid. I mean, bad things can happen to you if you speak out and tell your beliefs as they are, but worse things will happen if you don't. So Kongman, thank you so much for being on the program. Again, he's one of our amazing Prager Force members, and go follow him. Kongman, what are all your handles so people can come and support you after all this?
The Kongman Lee. They're shadow banning me, like, a lot. And I don't say that to, like, oh, look, they're shadow banning me. But, like,
right.
If you look up my name, you can't find me on Instagram unless you type up my full username.
Same here.
Oh, they got you too. Okay,
they got you too.
and so you have to, like, type up my full thing. It's The Kongman Lee. And that's my username for all my social medias.
Amazing. We'll put his handles down below so you guys can go follow. Again, Kongman, thank you so much for being on Will and Amala Live.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
What can I say?
I don't know.
Why are you looking at me like that, Will?
I'm not looking at you like anything.
Yeah, you're looking at me like something. I don't know.
No,
like, you're judging my interview skills.
No. Listen, Amala, that was probably the best interview I've ever seen in my life.
I think it's the best interview I've ever seen in my life.
Because I wasn't here. So it was much better.
That's the prerequisite to having the best interview of your life, is Will Witt not being
exactly.
there.
Exactly. No, it's already a par for the course if I'm not there.
Now, Will, a lot of people don't feel so great about this book coming out.
No, there are definitely some haters, definitely on Twitter and also in the Amazon reviews. So I want to remind you guys that if you have ordered my book and you're able to go on Amazon, give it a 5-star review, talk about it, say what you like about it, or just, you know, what you like about me, whatever, it'll help us reach even more people in the algorithms by going onto Amazon and giving it a review. So, and I'm reading some of them. And so I found this one today that was very funny. Okay, we can pull it up. I want to read some of the parts about this. From Disney Denizen, you already know, his top contributor for Harry Potter. So I think this already...
That's amazing.
Obviously, he's not a top contributor for Lord of the Rings, because if he was, he would love this book. He said, dumbest book I've encountered in a long time. Here's some of the great things he said. The opening words of chapter one spoke volumes to me. Quote, not a day goes by when I am not called a racist. End quote. That's how I opened the chapter in chapter one. You know how many days go by in my life without someone calling me a racist? Nearly all of them. When you are called out for something every single day, perhaps you should pay attention and reassess.
And we talked about this on the Dennis Prager radio show this morning. And it's just like that metric for judging things makes no sense. I get called a white supremacist nearly every single day. Am I a white supremacist? Because a lot of people say it.
Because people say it, it must be true. If the majority of people come out against you and say you're something, that means it's definitely true.
I read it on the internet. It must be true.
Exactly. I read it in an Amazon review. It must be true. This This guy says, today, much of the public school curriculum is written by leftists. Or that's something that I said in the book, which is true. And he said, uh-huh, especially the parts about intelligent design. This writer is attempting to rewrite reality. I'm over it. What public school in America is teaching about intelligent design? I mean, there might be some. I'm sure there are. Don't call me and say there's none. But it is not the majority of schools. No, oh, my goodness.
Certainly not.
No, not even close. Are you joking? I mean, come on. To say that that is the mainstream in public schools is ridiculous. Even the left will admit that they are in charge of the universities and in charge of the schools and pushing their agendas down them. So obviously fake here. And this one, this is my favorite line. Okay? Here's this final thing. He says, this book is rude, condescending, unquestioningly accepting of its own correctness, unfunny, unrelenting nonsense, and definitely not worth your time. If a leftist says that about something that is conservative, I think it means it is worth your time.
I think so too. That's,
but he did say 2 stars instead of 1 due to lack of glaring grammatical or proofreading errors.
Wow.
So at least we can all say that my grammar is on point, okay? Even if the content is rude, condescending, and unfunny, at least it's grammatically correct on funny.
You write good, Will.
Yeah, no, write good, man.
You write real good.
Good write.
Young man,
good.
Young boy.
Yeah, so anyway, you guys can get the book, my new book, How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies. It came out today. There's a link in the description where you can order the book. Finally, my first book ever, your tool on how to change minds, vanquish the left, and stand up to evil.
Now, guys, as I said, we did the Dennis Prager radio show today, and we love taking calls on the Dennis Prager radio show, me and Will, and we often take calls that are disagreement calls. Those are our favorite. Now, we got one disagreement call today that I want to play for you all to react to and just to listen to. This one's great.
Call that I want to take from Greg in Florida. Hello, Greg.
Hi, Greg.
Hi, good afternoon. Hi. Hello. I wanted to respond to the comment about people on the left being mediocre because they lack passion and they're afraid of risk-taking and stuff. That is an absurd comment. The most creative, risk-taking people in our country are the artists, the musicians, the actors, the designers, the creatives who predominantly come from the left.
Hmm. I think it's an interesting assertion. I think artistry is great, and I do think the left have sort of cornered the market when it comes to artistry and media. I don't think there's necessarily really anything stunning and brave about it, although I do appreciate art, I do appreciate creativity, I do appreciate the media. I think more now than ever, we're seeing that the media and artists are truly cowards. They all work in this institution that's enshrouded in ideology. They all back each other up. Will and I, as I said before on the show, we get so many artists, actors, musicians who reach out to us and say that they're completely unable to even speak about their views for fear of being alienated by the very market that they work in every single day. So I don't know if I agree.
Yeah, thank you for the call, Greg. Appreciate it. I think it's a very interesting question. Just because someone who is an artist or is a musical person or any of those types of things mm-hmm. says they are on the left does not mean that they are actually on the left.
Right.
You have to understand that these people in positions of great creative power, quote unquote, are using their platform to push leftist ideas because it mm-hmm. is what they are supposed to do. And let's also not pretend like the people in the mainstream, these mainstream artists, are the most creative people out
exactly.
there. Like the top 100, like top 40 or top 100 songs in America are basically all made by the same four people. The same people who write the songs are done by the same like four people. Music has become so corporatized and commercialized today that, yeah, it is all people on the left and it's all virtue signaling music. I don't listen to any of that top 40 stuff anymore. But you go back in time and look at music, these people didn't have these left-wing political ideas. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's always been a little bit more on the, you know, progressive scale when you look at things like the Beatles and such like that. But it hasn't been like a domination like it is now. And that's because it is a fake leftism. It is a fake virtue signaling from these people who are artists. And then even look at art nowadays. I mean, art nowadays doesn't represent human beauty at all. You go back and look at great artists of the past like mm-hmm. Monet and Impressionists and amazing artists, and you will find that their political messages are not, you know, about Black Lives Matter
right,
or
right.
about, you know, how many gay people live in their city or anything. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not what it's about. It is about images of beauty, and that's what music is about. Music is an art like these, and theater. These are the things that transcend transcend politics.
Exactly.
So, like, when I'm saying before about it being, you know, the people on the left are mediocre, that is people who are really on the left, who are saying that, you know, you shouldn't be passionate about things or be risky in your life, because then you are leaving a comfort zone that they think you should be a part of as a collective identity. But in whole, art and music and theater and these wonderful expressions of human nature are the most beautiful things, because they transcend the political world, the corporate political world that we have now been inscribed into.
Yet, because of our polarity now and because of how divisive everything is, art has become political, and it shouldn't be. Almost to the point where if you're conservative and you are an artist or you are interested in any of these fields, you're not even able to enter them anymore. And it's really difficult. I mean, I have a personal example here. Every single Monday on my Instagram, I do a stream where I go on and I just play music for the people who want to listen. It's not political at all. We don't talk ideology. We don't talk legislation. We don't talk politicians. Instagram banned me from being able to do that. Why? Because they don't like my political opinions. So our art fields, our media, a theater, anything that has to do with entertainment is just enshrouded with leftism right now, and that's a problem.
Oscar Wilde, who's one of my favorite authors, has a quote, mm-hmm. "All art is quite useless." It's at the end of his introduction to A Picture of Dorian Gray, which is my favorite book of all time. And it's the reason why he says all art is quite useless is because he is making the point that when an artist puts himself into the art, then the art is ruined and it is made about the artist itself and mm-hmm. not about the piece of art. And that art should exist, art, music, these types of things, exist for the sake of them existing, not to prove a political message. I think and Nietzsche was someone who also agreed with the same concept of beauty, of this. You know, you're making beautiful things and art for the sake of making beautiful things.
Yeah.
I hope I'm not going too
you're
off
not.
The rails,
we have...
but I think it's really important to
yes.
note that, you know, this is the reasoning for these things that transcend political boundaries.
And we have modern thinkers who think the same thing. Look at Jordan Peterson, who says you should never sign yourself on to an ideology. Once you've done that, you've sold yourself away. And that's what so many artists have done today. And that should never be the case. Sign yourself onto your ideas, your creativity, your morals, your values. Never sign yourself on to a particular set of ideology.
Let's take...
There we go. That's a clip from us on the Dennis Prager Radio Show this morning. You can go check it out by typing in Dennis Prager Show on YouTube, and you can go follow that as well, because Dennis has amazing insights that he gives to you every day for 3 hours.
Who knew that we were so passionate about art?
I know.
I am very passionate about art. Art is an amazing thing. Art is what brings people together and says, screw politics. Let's have something beautiful that we can look at and appreciate our own humanity for. That's what it's about.
And speaking of politicized works of art, that's a perfect segue
it
to
is.
Our final story.
Star Wars, ladies and gentlemen. So this is, I'm going to let Will and Taylor really bear the brunt of this conversation, but this is out of New York Post. The title here is Star Wars Sequel Trilogy Sucks, Original Film Editor Says. So the Oscar-winning editor of the 1977's original Star Wars film executed Order 66 on those responsible for the franchise's episode. Let's see.
Amelie, do you know what Order 66 is?
No, I have no idea what that is.
It's the order that the Emperor commands to have Anakin kill all of the Jedi in mm-hmm. Episode 3.
Okay. Who's Anakin and who are the Jedi?
Oh, my gosh. Just. All right.
Sorry, Bulba. Guys.
Will, I think you need to take over reading
but
this article.
But he says
right,
it
this,
sucks.
Give me this okay? Oscar-winning editor of 1977's original Star Wars film executed Order 66 on those responsible for the franchise's episodes 6 through 9.
7 through... It took me a minute,
No, too. Sorry. Okay, 7 through 9. Flat out saying it sucks. The storylines are terrible, just terrible, awful. He's not wrong. They were some of the worst movies ever made, those new Star Wars movies. Some of the worst movies ever made.
I reject the idea that they're even Star Wars movies.
Yeah, they're not.
There are
they're
six
not canon.
Star Wars films.
Marcia Lucas went off on Disney's evil empire led by executive Kathleen Kennedy and director J.J. Abrams, saying neither has a clue about Star Wars. In an interview for the book Howard Kazanjian, A Producer's Life by J.W. Rinsler. Now this is pod racing. Lucas, 75, who was the ex-wife of Star Wars creator George Lucas, was particularly adamant about Disney killing off the beloved heroes played by Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, and the late Carrie Fisher. What do you think about that?
I think she's based.
Oh, she's so right.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Oscar-winning editor of the original film. Speaking of, like, making art for art's sake, we talk about this with in reference to Lord of the Rings, and sorry, Amala, we find some way to bring up Lord of the Rings.
I've already counted myself out of this discussion. It's okay.
But you can get behind creating great films, great mm-hmm. literature, great art for art's sake, and telling powerful stories that capture some very like fundamental, essential parts of human nature and appeals to the hero journey and things that embody metaphorical truths that people can pattern their lives after and find success when you follow these narratives. And that is what is in the original Star Wars trilogy. That's what's in Lord of the Rings, is sort of these transcendent truths that are not political in nature, but very just human, and they hearken to truth. They hearken to something deeper in our souls mm-hmm. as human beings that call us into adventure, call us to be great, call us to have courage, and it's aspirational. And what we have now with these new Star Wars films, and just what's happening with like what you talked about on the call with that guy, with art in general, is it is engineered. It's social engineering through art in order to indoctrinate people with narratives that they want to believe in. You can feel it. You can watch those new films and it mm-hmm. just feels contrived and forced and very like, oh, let's take a little journey to this planet where the evil capitalists are selling weapons and it feels so engineered we have political ideas that we want to insert into this, so we write a script mm-hmm. instead of we have a great idea for a story in a film and we're going to make that film. And then, you know, if there's other truths, and I'm not even saying like there are movies with political themes and messages that are actually good and like illuminating and interesting.
They reach across the aisle.
Yes.
It's not vapid. It's not for...
But it's not ideology. You're signaling. Not trying to push your own ideas necessarily through mm-hmm. it explicitly.
Right. Yeah, it's not virtue signaling. It's like in a movie like American History X. Have you guys seen that movie?
No.
One of my favorite movies ever. That movie is very political. Okay? But it's political, I think, in the right way. It points out problems in America, problems in society in the right way, and shows like an actual solution for fixing a lot of the problems. It's incredibly deep. It's sad. It's heartwarming at times. I mean, it's a very tough movie to watch, but it points out political messages in the exact right way, showing the problems with America. But the new Star Wars, I mean, yeah, these are some of the worst movies ever created. And I'm not like even the biggest Star Wars fan in the world. I like Star Wars. Don't get me wrong. I know, you know, I like it. I can quote a lot of... You know, hello there. I can quote a lot of Star Wars too, but I'm obviously like Lord of the Rings better. But still, they were some of the worst movies of all time. And it's because of so many different things, but the politicization of it was really damning.
Yeah, oftentimes when you have a movie that actually speaks to something fundamental to, I don't know, the human condition or the human psyche, it extends across the aisle. Anybody from anywhere can listen to it. Anybody from any political stance can watch it and find something in it. And movies these days are not that. It's just like you are placating to one side and that side finds it enjoyable.
What's a movie that you would say is that represents that?
That represents what?
Like you said, you know, you can have a movie that's really good. And like
I don't know. We've talked about movies a lot on this show.
This
on
is
this
proof
show.
That Amala's never seen
I
a
do.
Movie before.
I watch movies all the time. It's funny because
Hunger Games.
I'm pretty sure that I watch more movies than both of you.
That is not true.
I've seen
almost every movie.
That's true in reference to me. I don't watch very many movies, but
yeah, no.
Okay, well, what do you have an example of like a piece of art, whether
okay,
song,
let's,
music,
let's,
whatever?
I'll just give a really simple film. Stand By Me is one of those that speaks to just a fundamental in the human condition. It's a coming of age movie that's great. That's about these young boys who are friends and they go on this journey and they all have different lives and different backgrounds, and it just speaks to this sort of shared upbringing that they have as young boys, but all through different lenses and all through different lives. But now, these days, it would be like Stand By Me, but one of the boys is trans and the other one is getting chased by a police officer. It's like...
Yeah, the train that's coming is actually just like a cop.
Right, exactly, exactly. It's not the same anymore. And it's just those movies that anybody could have sat and enjoyed and understood and known like, oh, when I grew up, my life was like that. And I remember going through that sort of realization of growing old and recognizing death and all this different stuff. It's not like that anymore.
Stand By They.
Stand By They.
Stand By Zer.
Oh, it's very accurate. It's very, very accurate.
You can't say stand because not everyone can stand.
That is ableist.
That's ableist.
You know,
that's
you know
ableist,
I went right? through that at my leftist organization. We used to have a community agreement before our meetings that was called Stand Up and Speak Up. And then when ableism was all the trend and everything, we realized we could no longer say stand up and speak up because some people...
That is absolutely ridiculous. To think that someone is so fragile that they would get offended by that is... is mind-blowing and indicative of what America
and is. And it's mind-blowing because it's true. Most people do not get offended by it. You have to literally conjure up the offense that you could possibly place on somebody.
Like, what slogan can you possibly have? Because it's like, well, raise a fist up. Oh, wait, so not everyone has arms.
Right.
It's like, there's going to be some
Speak
human
up.
Being.
Some people
that,
are mute. Yeah,
exactly. There's something that's, like, some person that can't do no matter what you, so you can never have a slogan? Is that, and that's basically, you know, we talk about political correctness and how you can't, you're not allowed to say common sense things or very self-evident things or, you know, you're not allowed to mention the fact that stereotypes exist in any way because it's politically incorrect. But what that does is, like, it just limits, everyone has to pretend that the world isn't the way that it is. Mm-hmm. And we all have to, like, participate in this fake engineered reality that's so vanilla. It actually robs us of diversity and robs us of actually celebrating things that are different from what our experience is and actually
so
understanding
true.
And experiencing it. Instead, you have this, like, vanilla world where everyone has to look the same, think the same, sound the same. You know, we all have to be equally disabled or whatever. Or you have to apologize for anything good that you have going for you. It's a very evil and backwards way to try to build a society, but here we are.
I can't believe Bob Marley was so offensive when he made his song Get Up, Stand Up.
Yep.
The gall.
Even if it was for your rights.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't matter.
Even if you're
it's
a
ableist.
Buffalo soldier. Even if you have three little birds.
Still offensive because some people don't have three little birds.
No, they don't.
It's
One
not...
in the hand is worth two in the bush.
I hate those phrases.
And how about the Beatles with the yellow submarine? Is that like, are they trying to send Asians underwater or something? I
right,
mean,
yeah. We don't
racist.
All live, okay?
Rolling Stones, Gimme Shelter. Sorry, all of us don't have shelter, okay? Paint it black.
This is like, can we make it racist, but can we like problematize a song?
We should do that. That might be our fun Friday.
Yeah.
That might be our fun Friday, guys. Can we make a song problematic?
Yes, every song.
Can we make a movie problematic? Yes, every movie. Now, what our segment is for today, now that it's Tuesday, is TikTok Tuesday. Now, we've all picked some TikToks that we're going to show to you guys and get your reactions on. We're going to start off with Taylor here because there's a new trend on TikTok called the berries and cream trend.
Wait, it's actually a trend?
It's actually a trend, the berries and cream
welcome.
Trend.
What is this?
You guys, I started the trend.
Yeah.
It's all thanks to me.
Where
I thought
people,
it was the peaches and cream.
No, it is berries and cream, and it's a new trend on TikTok. Now, I question whether or not Taylor originated this trend, because a little while ago, Taylor posted this TikTok.
What's a commercial from the 90s or early 2000s that you'll never forget?
You tried these new berries and cream Starburst? Pardon me. What kind of Starburst did you just say?
Berries.
Berries? Berries and what else?
And cream.
Oh! Berries and cream, berries and cream. I'm a little lad who loves berries and cream.
Berries and cream, berries and cream. Oh, I'm a little lad who loves berries and cream.
It's so strange.
Classic.
It's so strange.
Okay, so let me explain.
Yes.
Let me explain.
So this, I mean, if you're a millennial, you probably remember this commercial was like a commercial before social media was a thing, before viral videos were a thing. Everyone went to school and told each other, oh my God, the berries and cream commercial. Did you see it? It's so funny. And everyone was doing the dance. But this was back in like 2004, 2005, 2003, I don't even know, but like way back then. And you know, so I saw this trend on TikTok, or this, you know, Stitch thing that was like, what's this commercial that you'll never forget? And I was like, I searched for it and I was like, nobody's posted the Starburst one, so I bet tons of people will remember that. And this was my first or second TikTok ever. I had zero followers, and I posted it and I got like 600 and some odd thousand views,
right? Nearly 50,000 likes. Yeah,
so like it went, you know, I mean, I don't know, that's not really TikTok viral, but it's like it got a lot of traction for someone with zero followers.
Don't be so modest, Taylor.
Don't be so modest.
But anyway, that was back in March, and then now apparently this guy, little lad, as he's known, got on TikTok, and I didn't know that it actually started a new trend, though.
Yes, it started a new trend where people kind of sing along to this berries and cream song and do the little dance or whatever, and it got...
It's like a thirst trap.
Yes, and it got so big that now they sort of got the guy who did this, the little lad, the original man who did the commercial, to make his own TikTok redoing the dance, you know, decades later, so here's this.
And 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 berries and cream, I'm a little lad who loves berries and cream. Up the octave, go for it.
So
berries and cream, I'm a little lad who loves berries and cream. and that's it. That was it.
Never mind.
That is so weird.
I actually take that back. I had nothing to do with bringing this guy back into relevance.
Taylor, I think you had everything to do with this happening.
He wants some berries and cream. I got your berries and cream for you.
This is the power of the internet. We drudge up things that should really never be drudged up.
No, that's definitely true. I feel like this is like the Lucky Charms guy before rehab is like what I feel like I'm watching.
People dressed up as this guy for Halloween. Like, it was a whole trend back then, and it's so funny.
I never remember this commercial.
Came back. Yeah, I mean,
I didn't even know this was a thing.
Does Scott remember it? Scott's my age. Yeah.
Scott is nodding for those of you who can't see him.
So
Scott loves nodding. Berries and cream.
Anyway, so I apologize to the. So wait, what are people doing as the trend? They're like, is
we're
it just
dance.
Are Gen Z ruining it and just like shaking their butt to something? And
I want to click it, but yeah, I don't want to click it. They're like kind of dressing up as the berries and cream guy and doing it. I don't know if any of these are going to be inappropriate, so I kind of don't want to click it, but I'm going to click it.
Berries and cream, berries and cream. I'm a little lad who loves berries and cream.
There you go. There's a berries and cream trend.
Berries and cream.
There we go.
So Will and Amel are going to do that tomorrow to promote Will's new book.
Oh, absolutely.
Berries and cream. I got your berries and cream for you, my lad. I got it for you. Oh,
wow. That voice is really, really high.
That's what I feel when I get berries and cream, Mike.
Oh my gosh. Okay, now I chose a TikTok that's just very, very cute. It's this little girl and her dad's trying to do her hair and trying to get it right, and she keeps trying to teach him, and here's my TikTok.
Dad, it's like a ball. Like a ball.
How's it supposed to go?
Like a ball.
Like a ball? Like a bow?
No, like a ball.
A ball. First, I go like this. Got it. Okay.
And mom do that.
I know, but can I try?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Mommy always do that.
I know, but can I try?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that how it's supposed to look? Okay.
Her smile. Anyways, that was just really adorable. So that's what I chose for my TikTok. Thank extremely you. Culturally I relevant, so. Extremely politically relevant.
This is a woman's pick. For sure.
This is my pick. But yes. Also, okay, whatever. We're not going to, I won't expose you, Will. But
what do you mean
now,
expose me?
The other TikToks that I did not choose, these are Will's choices, are making fun of leftist TikToks. Because I figured, you know, I figured Will would choose something like this. Here we go.
Oh, absolutely. And I do believe there is something to be said about this sort of, how do I put this, willing ignorance. Right, this sort of duality between that consciousness of being aware in such manner and yet readily marginalizing that oh, absolutely. And I do believe
normal,
there is something to be said about
normal Chads just trying to live our lives and we gotta get bombarded by soy at all times. And I'm sick of it.
It's so accurate. I was that girl in high school. I was definitely that girl.
And I was the person having to listen to you.
Yeah, you were the guy.
Just like,
I was the girl.
Shut up, please.
We'd be talking in like history class, and I would be like, "Well, you didn't mention that they owned slaves and blah blah blah." That was totally me.
And I'm just like, please, I can't look at the lights right now.
What did I write a song? So in history class, I think it was my AP history class. We had to do like a creative project where we spoke about a former president, and mine was on Andrew Jackson. So I wrote this whole song about how Andrew Jackson was racist.
You wrote a song?
I wrote a whole song. I used to write songs for my creative projects because I was like, oh, I can do this so easily and I'll just write it and then I'll film it and that'll be it. And I wrote a whole song about how Andrew Jackson was racist and how he owned slaves. And if I can ever find it, I will play it live on this stream.
Please do. That would be epic.
I will play it on Music Mondays.
Can you write a new song about how he won a duel outside the White House?
Yeah, killed a dude.
Fair enough. That's my next single. I also wrote a song called "Let's Go to the New World." What was about the colonizers and also called them racists. So,
what?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Once I find the song, I will play it. I swear, I will play it
live
on the stream
on Columbus
for you guys all to react to. But I definitely
the Nina,
called them racist.
The Pinta, Santa Maria.
One more TikTok here. This one I just thought was funny. Work colleague. Oh, yeah, let me read this for you guys. Work colleague. Just FYI, I'm wearing gender beads. They show which gender I'm currently feeling. Me trying not to get fired.
Is that Joe Rogan?
It's Joe Rogan.
That's funny. That's a good one.
That's a good one. Anyways, guys.
Thanks, Joe. Anyways, guys, I think we're going to wrap up the show here, but just one more reminder that if you want to get my book, which came out today, How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies, Your Guide to Changing People's Minds, Vanquishing Evil, and Fighting Against the Radical Left, the link is in the description. We are very close to hitting some of those bestseller lists. If you already got the book, make sure you get one for someone who's on the other side so that they can learn the tools, or get one for a family member or a friend or someone you know who would appreciate the book today. Getting the book on the release day is very important if you want to support me, support PragerU, support Conservative Voices. So really appreciate it, guys. And the link is in the description for buying this book, How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies. And you can also get it anywhere books are sold. It's all thanks to you guys. Seriously. Really appreciate it.
Thank you guys so much for watching. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live, 2:30 PST, 5:30 Eastern. And if you'd like to listen, you can go to Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. Please leave us a 5-star review after you leave Will's book a 5-star review on Amazon, Audible, Barnes & Noble, every single platform that you can get on to support Will in this endeavor. Thank you guys so much for watching. We'll be back tomorrow, 2:30 PST.
Keep endeavoring.